Is the committee ready? Good afternoon, everyone. Let me call to order the Transportation Committee for Monday, February 3rd of Mount Pleasant Town Council. It's good to see everybody here. Pretty big group today, and we will try to get through everything. Item number one on our agenda that has been published is approval of the minutes from the January 6th meeting. Do we have a motion?
Motion to approve.
And a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of approval of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Item two is public comments. If you have a public comment to make, please come to the lectern, give your name and address, and you have 2 minutes. Anyone? Lectern over here. Name and address, please.
My name is Paul Hopmeyer. I live at 1839 Carolina Park Boulevard. There's a number of us from the same neighborhood that are here. We live in the Riverside section of Carolina Park, which is on the east side of Darrell Creek in Carolina Park. And we've had a number of issues with traffic in the area, as well as entrance and exit. The community has about 200 plus homes now, going to over 500, and there's one entrance and exit. And the community feels that's not sufficient to maintain safety, particularly if there's an obstruction, and also for traffic control. There's a one exit right now in Carolina Park, or entrance, which comes off of Darrell Creek. But currently, there is also a breakthrough, which we're not quite sure what it's for. No one's been able to tell us, in the backside of the Riverside section going to Faulkner, which, if that could be, in my view, an option for a secondary entrance exit, that would be a great spot. Faulkner is a lesser populated street. Homes set way back on larger yards, so they wouldn't be impacted by the traffic as we are on Carolina Park Boulevard and within the community, because we're about similar size homes but much smaller lots, so the noise and the traffic really affects our way of life. The second issue is a four-way stop we're asking for at Carolina Park Boulevard and Darrell Creek. The speed limit on Darrell Creek right now is, I believe, 35. And the speed limit on Carolina Park on the west side of Darrell Creek, I believe, is 35 as well. The problem is the line of sight coming in or out of Carolina Park Boulevard onto Darrell Creek, particularly turning left or going straight, is limited. And of course, in any neighborhood, if it's marked 35, most people are going 45, and there's been a number of accidents at that intersection over the past year. One of our neighbors, their son, had a very large accident. I believe his vehicle was totaled when he was trying to turn left onto Darrell Creek. Fortunately, he wasn't injured.
If you'd start wrapping them up, that's
yep.
Two. Thank you.
The last thing is the speed on Carolina Park. The speed is marked 35 on the west side of Carolina Park Boulevard. That's pretty much a residential area. I feel it's a little bit too excessive for the amount of pedestrian traffic on that street. And then when you come onto the east side of Carolina Park Boulevard, there's a sign. The sign says 25 miles per hour, all residential streets. I'm not clear as if that's for Carolina Park or just residential streets and what the difference is. Again, the speed in that area and the type of pedestrian traffic in that area, I believe 35 miles an hour. I think 25 miles an hour is pretty quick. There's a lot of children on bicycles, particularly on the Carolina Park section, which most of us live on. There's a lot of young families, and when the truck traffic, construction traffic, and even traffic going in and out, because there's only one way out, going 25 miles an hour is a little unsafe. I'm proposing that the residential areas within Carolina Park be 20 and Carolina Park Boulevard be 25 miles an hour.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next, name, address, and 2 minutes, please.
Thank you. My name is Stephen Shad. I live at 1281 Old Juanes Drive in Parrish Place. I've lived in Mount Pleasant since 1967. I wanted to bring up a couple of things I see on Mathis Ferry Road that are bothering me. As you know, Mathis Ferry Road is very heavily traveled now. It's not like the old days. And with the new school opening, there's going to be a lot more traffic. The first thing I wanted to talk about was the Ananap and Mathis Ferry by the library. It's very dangerous intersection. I pass by there every day, and people trying to get out, and people coming, especially if you're trying to turn left going toward town, and I want to know why there can't be a stoplight there. That's the question I'm asking. Why can't there be a stoplight? Okay, the second thing I wanted to mention is the open ditches on Mathis Ferry, especially down by Parrish Place. These ditches, after a good strong rain, will stay filled up for at least a week, right in front of the homes. It's not like on a rural road. They're right in front of people's houses, and there's mosquitoes get in there and trash, and I don't understand why those ditches can't be piped. And I think that's all I got to say right now. Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir. I appreciate it.
I'll be looking for that stoplight.
Thank you. Good luck. Next. Name, address, 2 minutes, please.
Hi, I'm John Stein, 1490 Windlass Way, also in the Riverside section of Carolina Park. I just wanted to emphasize 2 points about what Paul mentioned. Contemplate 545 homes funneling through one narrow street, in and out. Tree comes down across that street. We're all trapped until emergency services come and helps us out. There is a possibility of accessing Faulkner Road, and I think you guys should consider that. Additionally, the amount of truck traffic that's being generated by the continuing development, these trucks can't get past one another. So you have one heavy-duty truck going down the street, the other one's got to stop to let that one go by. This doesn't make any sense. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. That moves us to item number 3 on our agenda, presentation of Mount Pleasant Transit Study. Who is here today? And welcome, Paul.
Oh, thank you.
Taking the main,
yes, sir.
Good seat today.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Sharon Hollis with the BCD COG is here again this year, or this year. She was here last year to talk about transit, the division for Mount Pleasant.
And we see Sharon at CARTA meetings, where Brenda and I serve. It's good to see you.
We can run it for you if you want. Okay. All right. Just pointed it here.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me out here to give a presentation on the Mount Pleasant Transit Study. It is kind of a meaty document, and I do understand time is of the essence, so I'll quickly give a highlight of the study, and of course, if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. But about a year and a half ago, the town contracted with BCD COG to do kind of a deeper dive into transit in the town, really in parallel with the long-range transportation plan and the comp planning processes that were going on. So they can all kind of feed into each other and work in tandem. But to put it into perspective, in terms of the existing CARTA routes that are operating in Mount Pleasant, there are essentially 3 routes, and they continue to be some of our lowest performing routes. And it's a factor of a lot of different things, land use, infrastructure, socioeconomics, and just really the amount of investment in transit service in the town can all play a factor. The 2 routes that really perform the worst are Route 41, which serves Coleman Boulevard, which really is a town's most transit supportive corridor, and then the Wando Circulator, which serves North Mount Pleasant, which really has some of that more suburban types of developments that traditional fixed route transit services just don't work very well. And so those 2 particular routes, they cost about $17 to $19 per rider to make those trips, and only about 5% of those trips really are paid for with the fares. And over the past 2 years on this bottom graph, you can see that ridership has remained relatively flat despite the growth in the town. So one of the things we wanted to do in the phase 1 part of the study was really to understand, well, what is the vision of the community for transit, and what does that look like in the town of Mount Pleasant, and what are some of those strategies that we can look at? So part of that vision that came out of our outreach, came out of our meetings, came out of conversations with council members as well, was really to identify a fast, reliable, and convenient way with the goal to reduce traffic congestion, enhance economic development, improve mobility options, and to preserve the environment. And there are a lot of different ideas that came out of that we vetted through the process that you'll see listed here, and I'll talk through those as I get into the plan. So the second part of the plan, which is what I'm going to talk about today, was really the strategic vision plan. So what does that look like in the town of Mount Pleasant, and ultimately, what would it take to get us there? So we used these key objectives. I think it's important to emphasize that there's not a one-size-fits-all approach. It really depends on what are the objectives you're trying to achieve. So for example, a congestion management transit service is really that high-capacity, fast service designed to get people to work quickly, really needs park and rides, higher concentrations of people in employment centers to really move people through those corridors. But if your goal is perhaps maybe a mobility-focused goal to really make it easier for people to move around the town to get the places they need to go, you're going to design a slightly different service. So as you look through the plan, you'll see these icons and these strategies, so that as you look through it and you kind of look at this as like a menu of options in terms of services, you can kind of identify what are those key strategies that you want to achieve through this process. We do have two plans in there, a cost-neutral plan and a vision plan. The last time I came to this committee, one of the things that we were asked was to really present something that could be implemented right away. What can we do immediately to help move the needle on transit and to really solve some of these concerns that that we heard through the community? So we did put together some recommendations. One of those, the Route 40, which is our US 17 main line, extending that to Six Mile Road, where you have, it's kind of the end of the higher transit-friendly supportive types of developments. We have a lot of people that are transferring from the 40 to the 42 to serve that stop, so we can give them a better trip, make some improvements on the route to make it more reliable, more frequent. The other area is North Mount Pleasant, which is very challenging to serve with a fixed route transit service. Currently, we have Route 42 and a Tri-County Link route. So one of the things we're recommending is to consolidate those two routes and add some service to really serve that lifeline for North Mount Pleasant, but put some of the resources that are in Route 42 into the Route 41, which is really that core center of where you have the most transit supportive types of activity centers, being able to improve the frequency on 41, which is currently every 90 minutes, which is really, if you have another option, you're probably going to take it, and providing a better connection to East Cooper Hospital. So CARTA spends all in about $2.5 million on transit services in Mount Pleasant. That's at a cost of fixed route service of about $90 per hour. And then our Telluride service area, which you see there in green, which serves those that can't access the transit stop within a 3/4 mile radius, that costs us about $67 per hour to operate. But of course, we know that there is a vision for the future, and this is what we heard through the community, what it would look like in a 10-year vision plan. Now, of course, as I said, this is a menu of options. This is a plan that if it were all implemented tomorrow, it probably would not be successful, because you have to build the demand and make those decisions moving forward to help support this plan if, in fact, this is the direction the town wants to go. So I'm going to walk through some of the strategies and just kind of highlight what they mean, and then we can answer any questions at the end of the presentation. So the first one I want to highlight is the Mobility Innovation Zone, and that's really focused on that North Mount Pleasant part of the corridor, where a fixed route transit route circulating those neighborhoods really doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't think the communities would want that either, but that doesn't mean there's not a need for people to get to those activity centers, those green dots on the map, or to connect to the Route 40 to get that transit system into the city and throughout the town. So essentially, the Mobility Innovation Zone, we have it in two phases. The first would be a pilot program partnering with a transit network company like Uber or Lyft to help subsidize some of those trips to those activity centers or to the main system, so that people can actually get to transit without having to walk very far or drive, and really fits with the context of that community. As that demand grows, it could evolve into a demand response type of system where the route is created on the fly as a request for rides come in, but really centered on the transit node connection to the 40, because this is not a congestion management strategy, it's a mobility strategy. So by centering it around transit, you help to affect also the congestion management. The other thing we heard was express bus on 526, clearly a congestion management strategy would require park and ride investments, and we identified one, Long Point Road, as well as near 526 and 17. Limited stop hospitality shuttle is essentially the express bus service in the reverse. What we've noticed and what we saw on the data is that the town has just as many people commuting into the town as they do commuting out. So identifying express service is really focused around those centers of restaurants and hotels where we have a lot of people that are currently working and living in other parts of Mount Pleasant, in other parts of the region, but working in Mount Pleasant. Transportation was the number one challenge that employers identified in our outreach, so we developed a route really focusing on speeding up the ride for those workers that are coming into those jobs, really focusing on those purple stops where you have those concentrations. As the region grows and as the corridor evolves, Route 40 would be our prime candidate for bus rapid transit, which was identified for the 2035 to 2040 timeframe in the regional transit framework plan. But there's things we can do to improve the reliability and travel time. Transit signal prioritization as part of your traffic signal project would be a great corridor to implement. And as we can improve the ridership and improve the reliability, we can start to make those other improvements on the Route 41, essentially converting that to an urban circulator. So urban circulators are a good economic development tool. They are a congestion management tool, but they do require high frequency, and they also require a lot of subsidies. So for this one, we've proposed a 41. Once the 40 is pretty frequent, getting you into downtown Charleston, 41 becoming a circulator in Mount Pleasant to serve those major activity centers, Coleman Boulevard, in that more higher density area. It could used to serve tourists as well, but it would require a way, a means to subsidize in order to get people out of the cars and actually using it. Some communities do things like business improvement districts to fund these types of systems. And we've also identified infrastructure recommendations throughout here. So you'll see mobility hubs, park and ride facilities, and other transit infrastructure really centered around making that the places where you can easily transfer across routes, across modes. We'll take Waterfront Park for an example. Currently, we have the Route 40 and the 41 can connect there. If there's future ferry service, that would be an ideal location to transfer between modes. Bike share and pedestrian access all come together at that point, so it would make a lot of sense to kind of put together that one location where you can make all those seamless trips in one location. Park and ride facilities can serve carpoolers, vanpoolers, and then as those start to evolve and we start to see a lot of demand, that can evolve into those express transit services. And then one thing we heard, a lot of people didn't know that the services we have that are out there today exist today. So we did include some marketing strategies in terms of really getting the word out. A transit agency loses about 5% of its riders per year just out of attrition, people moving away, doing other things. So really having that ongoing marketing strategy as people come and go will really help to improve the ridership and awareness and ultimately, hopefully, the performance of these routes. So it is, as I said, a vision plan. It's non-funded, so it is it's everything, including the kitchen sink, in the plan. And it's really intended to serve as a tool for you to really look at it and say, well, what are the priorities we want to focus on first, and what are the things that maybe they're further down? So the cost-neutral plan is the first 2 years. It uses the existing CARTA budget. We could easily implement that with the resources we have today. The vision plan, all-in operations on year 10, if we implemented everything, it would be about $6.5 million per year to operate. Now, we did kind of make recommendations in here as to when certain strategies would be implemented over the next 10 years, because this is an evolution on some of these. The marketing plan will cost about $250,000 a year. Again, that's something that can vary depending on what's going on. And then, of course, CARTA has an existing fleet, and we have a very large fleet replacement program. So what we don't have in our immediate budget is new expansion vehicles. So in order to expand services, it would require acquiring new vehicles. So we estimated about $5 million worth of new vehicles to implement this plan. And then all of the other capital improvements, park and rides, mobility hubs, all of those pieces, we estimated about $14.8 million over the 10-year time frame. So for an all-in operations and capital of the next 10 years, if this plan were implemented, it would be about $71 million. So just to wrap up, in terms of the next steps is to, we can take any recommendations that the town would like to see modified or changed in this plan and make those changes, and ultimately it would be become part of the town's plans, and as well as CARTA would need to adopt the plan for the short-range plan. In terms of more next steps, finding funding partnerships, the two pieces that would really make the most sense to get the most bang for your buck, once you complete the cost-neutral plan, would be the Transportation Network Company pilot program, as well as the limited stop hospitality service, because those would serve an immediate need. And then, of course, we want to make sure we're monitoring and developing performance measures that really fit these services and the goals and objectives that we're moving forward. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
And just so everybody's on the same page, TNCs are, that's your Uber and your Lyft.
Yes.
Yeah, transportation network companies. Let me ask a couple of questions, Sharon. First of all, do you need action from this committee today? Because I'm sure this is a lot to digest. People have a lot of things to look at. But on the cost neutral plan implementation, I'm assuming that's kind of a no-brainer, right?
I mean, it's certainly, if the town supports it, I know that CARTA would support it.
Okay. It's where you get to the, can we go back to the...
Vision.
Yeah, there we go. The vision.
The
visions of dollars signs, Nancy.
Yes.
Go to the dollars. There we go. It's that $71.5 million that, wow. I mean, that's a lot.
It does. And again, that's assuming park and ride, full facilities, mobility hubs. A lot of the capital, I think there's opportunities for partnerships. So knowing, for example, you have a mobility hub planned in this location, as development comes online, which the town currently does with shelters, having those partnerships and having those kind of know that's a place where transit infrastructure needs to be in place in the future really helps to bring that cost down. So it's really about making the community transit ready, so when transit is there, the infrastructure is in place.
Mm-hmm. Committee, yes,
Brenda? Just have a question or comment. I've always been amazed that more students do not take advantage of this. Has that gotten any better, that route to the north of town from that big high school?
That particular route has not. So CARTA recently implemented a program where students K through 12 can ride for free, and we have seen significant ridership from that group on certain routes, but we have not seen it on that route. Looking at the bell schedules, I think there are ways we can adjust the timing to make it more convenient, but that's one of the things we would do with these cost-neutral recommendations is really look at the bell schedule and try and cater it more to be conducive for students to ride.
It seems like a no-brainer. Those buses are way nicer than, you know, a school bus. Mm-hmm. I never got that, why they... And then marketing, I personally think that if we could market specific rides, just letting people know this route will get you from here to there, whether it's town center or whatever, that would be, I'd appreciate that. I think that would be good knowledge to have as a resident.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chapman.
Sharon, could you explain to me how you can use a rural transit service in an urban area with 203?
Well, and that is why we have 1 to 2 year time frame for that one, because it will require some changes to how those routes operate. But it is possible to, and I've worked in other cities where they've done this, to split a route between urban and rural. For those that aren't familiar, our funding sources for Tri-County Link are federal rural dollars, and our funding sources for CARTA are federal urban dollars. And so you basically define how much of it is urban is how much of it is rural, and you allocate it that way, and FTA has to approve it. So it will require a new structure for the agency, but ultimately the goal of the region is for regional trips. So if you live in the rural area and you're trying to get the urban area, you don't care about the funding source, and so it will be a way for us to really identify how we can consolidate these systems to make that seamless trip without forcing transfers.
Well, the seamless would be a direct transfer onto an urban area. That would be the seamless way to do it. Number two, are we going to get any electric buses over here?
We have the entire 1996 fleet is is programmed to be replaced. So I think we have about 24 vehicles. So the first two grants have been identified for air quality. So that's the Route 10, 11, and 12 were awarded first. And then as they come online, we'll start to implement them on the other routes. So ultimately, all of our larger buses are intended to be all electric. So they will be circulating throughout the region.
And how far can those buses go without being recharged?
We are currently testing one in the field. Currently, they said 6 to 8 hours. We have our initial tests have been pretty good in terms of battery charge, but we're going through that learning curve now. So we have three currently that have arrived. So we're going through that test. Our biggest challenge actually is because we're moving from a 35 to a 40-foot vehicle, which is great because we have more capacity. But we're finding that a lot of our routes, we can't make the turns because the roads and the turning movement is too narrow. So that's one of the unintended consequences of adding more capacity.
And finally, park and ride lots in Mount Pleasant are a joint venture, public-private partnership. Are we getting credit for that in that $6.4 million, or are we not getting credit for that and y'all going to build something brand new?
Well, what we have is completed a park and ride study, which identified new park and ride facilities. So our current park and rides, although they're shared partnerships, they're in the parking lots at the Walmarts, they're not completely designed as a fully serviced park and ride. They're very difficult to navigate, and at any moment we can be kicked out, which happened a few years ago. So an ideal situation would be that we have permanent, reliable park and ride locations that are agency-owned or town-owned that serve that role and have the ability to serve the capacity of the future needs. So we do have new facilities identified that came out of that study, one up in North Mount Pleasant, kind of across from the shopping center, and then one at Hungry Neck in 17.
I know in the developments that come in, that question is continually asked by our staff, what can you do to help Carter? And I know there are a number of members of the Planning Commission that ask that question. And a number of them, when asked, have been helpful. So public-private partnerships can do a lot to reduce that $6.470 million. But
absolutely,
that's the question that's got to be asked.
Yes, ma'am.
Can we go back a few slides to where it showed how much per
rider?
Okay, right there. Yeah. So one of the things when thank you for all of this, by the way. One of the things that I learned early on, and in fact, I think it was while I was still campaigning, riding the bus and riding it all through town, all the way downtown, asking people on the bus what is their experience. And I just want to see, like the 41 Coleman Boulevard, I believe that was one of the ones I was on, is that one of the reasons why they weren't always full, they weren't always completely subscribed to, was because of changes or delays that made it impossible to rely on it to get to work on time. And so I'm wondering what's being done to address that, or have things been done to address that? Clearly the cost per rider is still high, which makes me think we're not getting enough riders and enough subscribership for these. Let's start with that.
In terms of reliability, that has been a focus of CARTA. We have seen a tremendous improvement, but again, our buses are stuck in the same traffic everyone else's. So if there's an incident on the bridge, we're impacted. One of the opportunities, which is in this plan, with the new traffic signal technology the town has implemented, CARTA can also use that technology to traffic signal prioritization. So essentially, if a bus is running behind schedule and it hits a light that's about to turn red, it'll stay green to let the bus go through. And so there's a lot of parameters you can put into place that will help with the reliability. We also have an app so people can see if it is running late. They don't have to walk out and things like that. But until transit can actually be prioritized and have its own dedication, reliability is always a risk, so we'll adjust the schedules, we'll make those changes that we need. I will say for the Route 41, it is a 90-minute route, so the frequency is a big part of that, so if we can add additional resources to bring that, to make it more frequent, we might be able to see an opportunity for improvement in that route.
Okay, and then if we can go back forward on the slide, a couple other things. The one about, okay, wait.
This one?
Let's see. No, let me, one more. It must be, okay, it was about marketing and so forth.
Yeah, oh,
okay, there
yes.
we go. So, again, it seemed to me that, and it was in that one experience, but then I've asked a lot of questions since then of different folks, and things like the fact that the more ridership you have, the more subscribership you have, the better the services can become. And the fact that, I know there's, I've seen commercials, I've seen other things that, you know, you have Wi-Fi, you can work while you're on your way to work. I wonder, can we do even more to help people? But again, if it's not reliable, they're not going to be able to convert over to that. They're going to still figure out how to have a car or borrow a car or get a ride from a friend or a coworker. The other thing, let me just think about what that other one was. There's a couple aspects of this that, oh, I know, and that is the private-public partnerships. So the MUSC Express that goes from Walmart, that's fully subscribed. And that's, I mean, it's completely full as far as I know, and people love it. And it's all professionals, and they're in their uniforms, and they're ready to go, and they love it. They would not ever want to switch back to having to pay for parking and struggle with getting over the bridge with their own car. It seems like we could, that Carta could have, you make it sound like at any day, Walmart can change their mind, and somebody along the way did. Well, we have those parking lots at the new Lowe's all the way on that end of town, and we also have the ones at Oakland, obviously. And during the regular workday, most of those parking lots are not full. On the weekends they are, but on the regular work days. So I just wonder, could it be that you could have a real contract with those owners of those parking lots? And even on 41 with the new Lowe's, with the, I think it's the Adams Group that owns that shopping center, seems like you could get something that could be more permanent, more reliable, because to have to spend a whole bunch of money to build something else and also pave, the last thing we want to do is pave more permeable land. I mean, we'd rather keep it as green space. So anyway, I wonder if we could work hard on that.
Absolutely.
If you would go back to the ridership numbers, there we are. I'm trying to figure out if you look at this, and I know the Coleman route, I know the Wando circulator, the 42, the 40. I'm trying to think what some of the distinguishing landmarks of that are. Would that be where Home Depot is at 6 Mile Road?
Well, that's in the recommendation. Currently, the 40 goes from downtown Charleston along the 17 corridor, and it turns around at the Isle of Palm Connector Town Center. So that's the extent of it. One of the challenges with that route is it operates on the side roads of 17. So if you live on one side, you have a bus right in front of your neighborhood on the 17 on the north side, but on the return trip, you've got to make it all the way across Johnny Dodds and 17 to the stop on the other side. So it's a very challenging corridor to effectively serve with transit because of the way it's designed. So really looking at that transit signal prioritization, maybe looking at better ways for the bus to access in terms of infrastructure would be a way to help improve that route moving forward. But it's a challenging route because of really the road infrastructure along that corridor.
And I don't know what the surveys or whatever show, but the one that just boggles my mind is 41 on Coleman, because that is the place where we have allowed the highest density, mm-hmm. over 50 units per acre at Oyster Park. And it was unlimited. I don't know what it ended up being at the Boulevard. And those were going to generate bus riders. People were going to leave their cars parked. And yet at $17.11 per rider on Coleman Boulevard, I mean, soon Carta is going to say, here's a gift certificate, call a transportation network partner, right? And I can't figure that out. So it must have... There must be more than just population density along a bus route to generate riders. It's got to be employment centers, ease of access. So I don't think we can wave our magic wand and say we need more density and we'll have better transit. We also need better employment centers, better access to those, better last mile. I mean, mm-hmm. finish my sentences for me and I will not be offended at all.
No, it's all of the above. And it ultimately comes down to resources on the 41. As I said, it's a 90-minute route.
Right.
I can use the HOP route in downtown as an example. It runs every 15 minutes. It costs us about $1 million to operate. But now in the year and a half it's been operating, it's probably one of our top performing routes. And it was designed for people to be able to park and ride the system to hit those stops along along those hospitality industry jobs.
Right.
The people who are using it are the people making those short trips up and down because it's every 15 minutes.
Right.
It's heavily subsidized because we don't collect a fare on it. It's free. So there's a lot of factors, the fare, the frequency, the reliability, all of those come into play in addition to the infrastructure and the land use. So it's really a combination of things. So you're absolutely right in that regard. So the 41 corridor, it should perform much better. But at a 90-minute route, that's a lifeline service. So you're only going to ride it if you have no other option. And sometimes it just won't meet your needs.
So it's four riders per hour in either direction.
And that's a 90-minute route, so you have 45 minutes in one direction and 45 minutes back. So.
Right. Any other questions? I think we will continue to look at this, and we might email some questions, or Brenda and I serve on the CARTA board, and we'll see you there. You're there
Excellent.
Every month.
Great.
Did Daniel have anything to add? Or? Okay, all right. Thank you, Daniel Brock. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. We have copies of that, right? Okay. All right. Let's move on to item number 4, Charleston County Transportation Sales Tax and Charleston County Transportation Committee Annual Project Selection. We do this every year.
Yes, sir. It's February, which means it's time for our TST project submittals. And I believe Brad sent a memo to the committee describing the projects and the process, and I'll be happy to go through that memo. We submit projects to the Charleston County Transportation Sales Tax Program every year, and those projects typically consist of local paving of dirt roads, intersection improvement projects, and pedestrian and bicycle enhancement projects. Historically, and the county will take submittals from all agencies and all municipalities and rank and grade those projects. Typically, historically, it's $2 million for local paving, $2 million for intersection improvements. I think they still allocate money for drainage, and then $500,000 for pedestrian and bicycle enhancements, and then $1 million for county council public works projects. So the two projects we're going to submit this year are the US 17 and Annette Boulevard intersection improvement project, which is included in our CIP. It is to get dual left turns from 17 onto Annette, both northbound and southbound. And so
and that's primarily a safety factor.
It's that and a capacity. When Johnny Dodds was improved back in 2011 and 12, we think they have enough width in there for us to get an additional left turn lane, and it should have been designed and set up for that. So it's a fairly straightforward project to get done with no right of way acquisition.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
What about storage?
Yes.
Storage between the service road and 17. Right now, that intersection, probably 6 hours a day.
Yeah.
You don't have enough storage with one left turn lane. Where are you going to get storage from?
So without diving too deep into the design aspects, there is availability to remove a portion of the existing median on the approach to the intersection that would be allocated for additional storage on 17 to make the left turns. And then it's just a matter of coordinating the traffic signals on the frontage road there, at least on the west side of Annette, in order to keep traffic from backing up through into 17. But
that's the key.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you Chief Ritchie could tell you about the accidents that happen there every day. That if you put two left turn lanes without figuring out what you're going to do between the service road and 17, that's a recipe for disaster.
That'll be part of the design and the traffic studies associated with that project.
You're going to create land?
No, sir. We're going to remove the existing median.
The median on Annette.
Yeah.
The throat distance between those two intersections is substandard at best, okay. But it's just the way that it's designed. And again, we'll through traffic signal coordination, we'll be able to coordinate with those left turns off of 17 to make sure we get as much throughput at that intersection and reduce those queues that develop over time.
Anything you do to improve that intersection would be very much appreciated.
Mayor?
Yes, sir.
Please know, for number one, that the chief benefit is it allows more green time for the main line of 17.
Got it.
That's the chief benefit. So it should improve the overall mobility of the whole corridor.
That's good to know. Quick question, were these ranked by priority? How did we arrive at these?
These two projects were not ranked by US 17N, and that was ranked in our CIP.
Right.
It was not ranked as part of this. The county will rank those two projects along with the other ones that they receive.
Okay.
So we may not get one this year. I think we got one last year, which is a roundabout design for Paul Foster at Bell Hall Parkway.
Right.
I think that was our project. So it just depends. I mean, they'll rank them, and whatever ranks the highest will get funded.
So they're already ranked in our CIP. This is just a matter of what they choose to fund by their ranking.
Yes, sir.
Got it.
And then we have some drainage improvement projects.
Right.
That we'll submit, and any. And most of these other projects will be submitted to the CTC for funding. And those projects typically range in the $250,000 to $300,000 range. So we'll be submitting. We have ranked these, the town staff has ranked the pedestrian and bicycle projects. We have a pretty objective matrix that we use for ranking. And we always, the higher speed, higher volume facilities always rank a little bit higher. Hamlin Road is one that we will submit. We have, the design is complete. We have a large elementary and middle school campus there. There were some sections of sidewalk at that location that we did not get in when we did the first phase of Billy Swales Boulevard.
Right.
So now we're trying to get that project's a little urgent. We'd like to get that one done.
And that's also ranked in our priorities. This is just to get their funding if they see fit.
We actually, I think we have enough funding to complete that project on our own, but we'll still seek additional funding.
Right. Yes.
Can I ask, on the drainage improvements, number two, roadside ditch restoration program, is that the same area that Mr. Hotmire was referring to? No, because you were talking about, where everything from mosquitoes and whatever. So it's not about adding more pipes underneath, or what is it?
No, I think that's just the roadside ditch rehabilitation restoration program.
It improves the overall drainage of the road.
Oh,
right,
okay.
Right.
Okay.
And then we have our low speed, lower volume neighborhood streets listed there as well.
Mayor, if I could make a suggestion, having served on the CTC since inception until last year, which ones of those projects are going to the half-cent sales tax, and which ones are going to the CTC?
I suppose number one and two under intersection improvements, based on their dollar values, would go to TST.
Okay.
And then this whole list will be submitted to the TST. And anything that doesn't get funded, anything that comes back to us, we'll submit to the CTC.
Well, my suggestion is to be specific, especially for the CTC, and be specific about your number one, two, and three ranking.
Sure.
Because the first thing they look at when they evaluate the projects
right. Is
the number one project from each jurisdiction. Very, very rarely do you get two projects. But if it's a lower project, as an example, you got a price on Hamlin Road of $400,000, but then you got some lower priced projects that if they don't have enough money, they might dip down to. So it's critical that you rank for the transportation sales tax and then rank for the CTC.
What do you need this committee to do today?
We love your blessing. Just a vote to move forward and see how we do at getting some of these projects funded.
All right. Do we have a motion from the committee?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor of the motion to approve this list as submitted, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. It's approved. Thank you. Good work.
Thank you.
Item number five is discussion with regard to construction, traffic, and access points in Carolina Park. I guess staff has some background on this.
Well, I guess we were asked to address this. Mrs. Landing put it on the agenda. I guess I would let you start that discussion if you're okay with that, and then we'll.
Sure. Sure, I'll be happy to. Thank you. So I'm picking up basically where our citizens came up and spoke about the fact that we have over 200 homes in the Riverside community. I've driven out there myself to take a look at their reference points, and Carolina Park Boulevard is their main access, their only access right now. And so it's expected to go, or at least it's the plans are for 545 homes. And so we're going to see well over double, nearly triple the amount of homes in there. And already they have a lot of traffic issues in the mornings, which were already outlined in the public comments. When you drive just down the road a little bit off of Darrell Creek to Faulkner Road and turn right, this is a much more wooded neighborhood. It's a small road, but it's it winds around and it goes very much parallel behind Riverside. And so I didn't go all the way out to the point where this cut through is, but that's what they were asking. Is there a way, just really almost more from emergencies than to have it be a constant path out of Carolina, out of Riverside?
So we put this map together that shows the different phases of Riverside and some of the other developments there. Currently, or in the past, the construction traffic had used the temporary construction access that you see there. Well, that property, I guess, has been sold, and the developer now is installing his infrastructure and building that connection, that road there. So now the construction traffic is meandering, I guess, now more through the neighborhood. And
So does that mean the temporary access no longer exists?
It's gone away now, and then ultimately when that road is completed, it will be another access.
Regular road?
Yes, sir. I think that's, no. Oh, it's not?
No, it's just a temporary access at this point. It will be, it will go back to as kind before.
Okay.
So as far as connections to Faulkner Road, there
show
is.
Show us Faulkner on the map, please.
Where's that? Faulkner Road is to the left. I don't know where our pointer went.
It's probably at the dais. Yeah.
So that is a temporary.
Right along the western edge. If you look at the map.
Right there.
This
right
is
yep.
That's Faulkner Road.
Pointer. So this is one.
Thank you. Right.
So there are two utility cut-throughs through those wooded areas. One's for a stormwater. It's about a 15 to 20 foot cut through easement, and the other one is a 30 to 40 foot sewer and water connection. There were discussions initially about connectivity to Faulkner internally, and certainly with the residents of that area, and it was very much opposed by the residents of Alston Point. The reality of the situation is, I mean, this area, although it does have one point of access, if you look at the wetland map, you'll see the reasoning behind that is mainly due to the fact that, you know, impacts to the wetlands were attempted to be mitigated to any lesser extent. As far as emergency services, there is Fire Station 5 located a quarter mile away in case there is any emergencies. The traffic that's seen on Darrell Creek now, we do anticipate that to reduce with the future connection of Carolina Park to Coastal Crab Roadway. So I think there will be some diversion of traffic at that intersection. Per the residents' request, we can certainly investigate these other recommendations as they relate to reduction in speed. That's something that I don't think we'll probably be able to do. It's town ordinance that residential roadways are 25 miles an hour, but we can certainly look at any sort of always stop improvements. We've done modifications and improvements to the intersection of Carolina Park and Darrell Creek with the implementation of a more higher visibility crosswalk. We've also coordinated with police as far as targeting enforcement of speed through that area. And then as far as truck traffic and construction traffic is related, this is just how the neighborhood is built out and phased, as is every other neighborhood. You build from the front to the back, and on the right side here, you'll see the number of anticipated homes left to be constructed. We have not gotten any word from the developer on their timeline on that. I think it's all tied into economy and supply and demand needs, but that's kind of where we stand now.
When I was out there on a hot summer day with the developer, we were looking over everything, and they said that the projections that we had for the build-out were highly, not exaggerated, but things have slowed down a lot since then. I think, Jeff, you might can attest to that, that whereas at one point we thought they might be pulling 200 building permits total a year, they said that it wouldn't be 100. So it'll be slower. The build-out will be slower. I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse when you're already out there. Hopefully it'll be less traffic, but then the build-out will take longer, I'm sure. So what is the best thing that we can do right now? One is, I hear, the look at the four-way stop.
And enforcement of the speed limits.
And enforcement of the speed limits. The chief just yeah. stepped out. Now, I've been on transportation since I first got elected in 2015 as a council member. And what I've learned is every time you do enhanced enforcement, it ends up being you. You think it's them, right. It ends up being you. I just want everybody to realize that. It's probably going to be friends and family that end up getting those speeding tickets. We're always warned about that by our police. However, we enforce the speed limits. If there were to ever be another access cut through, does anybody have an idea exactly where that might be?
That's one of my questions.
It seems reasonable that it would come through perhaps where one of those existing cuts have opened up.
Right.
But I believe there could be, the only reason those cuts are opened up, like we said, was to get utilities in.
Right.
There could be wetland issues there. I don't know.
Because I know just looking at it on a gray and white map like this doesn't tell us everything we need to know.
I think they would end up losing lots at this point. So there would have to be some discussion with the developer about giving up lots to make a connection, say, through here.
Right.
Or through here, or here, or wherever.
You're behind us.
Same place.
Oh, yeah.
These areas.
That's right.
Or those existing cuts.
So let me ask to state the obvious. It stands to reason that this would not have been permitted or not have been allowed under the development agreement if the ingress, egress, all that did not meet code, did not meet the current safety requirements. We may be talking about an extra level of prudence, but there's nothing nonconforming about what's built.
Correct.
Okay. It's not a deficiency, is what you're saying.
Correct.
At this point.
Right.
Okay. Yes, sir, Mr. Jack.
Mayor, I see Mr. Mitchell in the background. Mr. Mitchell goes over all these subdivisions, every one. And I do recall when this was brought to the Planning Commission, I had some issues about connectivity. And if we've got to take a couple of lots from the developer to put in something like a alternate access, we need to look at it now before it gets built. And I would ask that besides what you suggested in terms of four-way stop and speed control, that we task staff to take a look at where that might happen, even work with the neighborhood where they think the best place would be, because they're the ones that are going to be inconvenienced, if you will, if we put something in that's not the best, because we might be adding traffic problems. So is that something you'd be willing to ask staff to look at too?
Let me see, Ms. Lynn.
Well, I'd like to first of all say, you know, anytime you start talking about taking something away, it sounds a little scary to people, but the reality is that it should have been planned out that there was another access. It seems to me, even if it seems like it's in code and so forth, if they're already experiencing it. But here's a couple questions. One is, how much is the construction traffic itself impacting things? Because when that's...
I was there 8 o'clock this morning. Yeah. I walk every single morning. Mm-hmm. At 8 a.m., mm-hmm. the truck line going into Bolden Lake was a line. The truck line coming out of Bolden Lake was a line. At 8 a.m., only one truck could come this way, mm-hmm. wait, and for the other to then come through this way. this was ridiculous. Yeah.
So the thought there being that it's going to be a while, but when the construction is over, this is not, that's not a permanent condition. So
one of the issues we're having,
we're not allowed to do this,
is they're building in two phases simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
One phase is where they're closing that temporary construction access, which used to be effective, but we were told by the developer the only reason that was put in was to allow for truck traffic when they were digging out Bolden Lake. It was never intended for builders to use or their developers.
Right.
And then they have work going on further in the back end, so you have double the construction traffic they've had before, and it's all infrastructure, so a lot of dumb traffic.
So it sounds like we might need some sort of coordination where, I mean, the fact that the construction traffic is having this much impact on the residents, it looks like there should be some other access for them. I will tell you, Faulkner Road is definitely a very small, winding road. It doesn't look to me like it could tolerate a huge amount of traffic unless you did some pretty big improvements to it, but I don't know roads like you folks know roads. So I'm just saying, what are we talking about with the access if we looked at lots? Are we talking about to Faulkner Road, or we're talking about, because the mayor's point of, is there another way to have another access somewhere else?
All I'm suggesting is let the staff take a look at it.
Good. I think that makes sense.
Let both the planning staff as well as the transportation staff take a look at it and see what they can work out, but you know, working with the residents.
I agree. Do you need a motion for that?
What?
No,
we don't need a motion, but if I may, this is an approved plan development. And certainly wouldn't want the residents leaving thinking that there is something more that could happen than maybe possibly can.
Right.
We can control what we can control, chiefly looking at intersections and how productive and safe they are, speeding. But as far as acquiring lots, as far as approving additional access points, it is not unusual for us to receive concerns from residents about construction traffic. It's happened all over this neighborhood. And a condo wasn't that long ago in this neighborhood here. What I'm trying to say is there are things we can work on directly, and there are things that have to include the developer at Carolina Park.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because we couldn't unilaterally adjust some of these things on our own.
Right. Okay.
Right. We'll just do our best is what we're trying to say.
We're happy to do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. If staff will do that, and then when you have enough information to bring back to us, bring it back to us, and we'll get word out to y'all that we've got some progress to report. Very quickly, please. Yes, sir.
We were told by the developer that they, when they originally submitted to the plan, they had two at the points. So for whatever reason, they denied access to having two points.
I guess if that's in the record, we'll find that somewhere. Thank you for informing us of that. All right. Item number six, discussion with regard to prohibiting truck traffic along Mount Pleasant scenic highways.
Yes, sir. Mr. Mayor, I'm the one that brought this up, and hopefully it was in your packet where I responded to a letter from Ms. Glenn, Pamela Glenn, who lives essentially adjacent to Long Point Road near the intersection of 17. And at one time, there was a no through trucks sign and a sign indicating that it's part of the scenic highway. I drove the intersection, and I didn't see it, but I've been told that probably it's out there somewhere. But the problem is that if the signs are there, then we need to do what was suggested in terms of enforcement along there when we talked about Mathis Ferry, too, earlier. But Long Point's worse because it's a direct line from 17 to the port. And in the original impact statement for the State Ports Authority to build the Wando Terminal, there was specific language that the Port Authority would in some way restrict truck traffic to coming into it off of I-526. So I don't know if there is any motion needed in terms of enforcement, because that's the police department's responsibility. But I think we could make them aware that there's a concern, and I think the Port Authority needs to know that we've had these complaints, and at least to try to honor what was approved and signed off on as part of the impact statement.
I'll address the Port Authority thing. The police department and I have been in two, and now I think there's a third one coming up here soon that the Ports Authority has initiated for everything from the terminal all the way to 17 on Long Point Road. And they are well aware of this. However, we are the enforcement people. They don't go out and enforce things on our roads. So that is being addressed. The information campaign is out there. Everything's been addressed from speed limits to accident rates to the improvements that we're making over closer to the terminal. So that part is actively being addressed. The sign part, I'm not sure about.
Well, maybe Likens might have an answer.
Yes, sir. Our staff looked, and we indicated that the signs were up. However, there was one that was blocked by some trees.
There you go.
And we've put in a work order with SCDOT to have those trees cleared so you can see it.
Okay.
It's tree trimming.
The answer was trimming.
It's behind a bush.
The item was trimmed.
Trim, yes. And so then there's the enforcement issue also. When we were doing the traffic circle there at Needle Rush Parkway, occasionally at night a truck would sneak down through there and damage freshly poured concrete from the thing. And so we got the state transport police involved. I think SCDOT helped us out with that, and it worked. So I just wanted to offer that.
So you got signs at both ends, both at the Whipple Road end and at the 17 end?
Yes, sir.
Good.
Okay. And these meetings, they hold them at the Ports Authority. They fill up that big new conference room of theirs, and state transport police are there. We're there. It's all hands on deck to address these issues.
Most of the professional truck drivers know that they can't use that route because they simply, it's difficult to get a truck down there because of the geometry of the roadway and the failing culverts under near Snee Farm and the trees and no shoulders. So usually it's probably just a delivery truck that is allowed to use that for local deliveries.
Okay. So we're going to address the trimming of a limb trim. Where this sign is, my ears go up on that as well. And then the chief and everybody involved and the trucking companies and the Ports Authority are well aware that we've got to get this information campaign out about that. Item number 7 is update on ongoing projects.
Okay, you can skip that one. Okay, staff and the consultants are still working on the final phase of Billy Swales Boulevard. We're still in the NEPA process, trying to figure out the preferred alignment or the best alignment that mitigates or minimizes impacts to wetlands. And we are working hard to start construction in August of next year. Next one. And there's the
August of 21?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
US 17, the Rifle Range Road connector, the design is complete. We recently completed a review of the right-of-way plans. We'll be meeting with DOT to discuss the project as they have, we'll be tying into their facilities at 17 and Rifle Range Road. And the next step will be to start the right-of-way acquisition process.
Okay. And if y'all have questions, stop us as we go.
All-American Boulevard, we have begun right-of-way acquisition on phase 2 of the project, and we've made initial contacts with property owners, and the next step will be to make property appraisals. Patriots Point Gateway, we've been working with the SCDOT for almost a year, it seems like, getting a design exception for lane widths there so that we could get bike lanes in. And I've told we should have that agreement, that design exception this week. And approval of the right-of-way plans are forthcoming. And then property acquisition is also the next step on this project. So we're going to be buying a lot of right-of-way and real estate here over the next few months for our projects.
And everybody knows Patriots Annex is coming.
Right.
Ferry Wharf will be opening, and the misnamed Charleston Battery soccer team, should be Mount Pleasant Battery,
right,
will be playing games here. They're going to be expanding the stadium So it's good that we're paying a lot of attention to that intersection.
Yes, sir. Yes, yeah.
All right. Any questions? Thank you for the update. Anything else from staff?
No, sir.
All right. Next item on our agenda, number 8, is adjourned. There being nothing before this committee, we stand adjourned.